Another one of our longtime favorite podcasts tonight, the top 10 prospects in the NBA. No one is paying me to write anymore, so I'm doing this exclusively for the pod listening audience and still put the same amount of work in, and so we can reveal the list on the air right now. The way we're going to do this is I have my list. Danny has his. He's just going to comment where he really significantly differs from mine. And Danny, I expect we're going to have some differences because I found this much more difficult than in past years, in part because we've had such a boon of young talent in the league.
The young talent is a major element of it, and also I spent some time reworking my list due to the idea of positional scarcity, because I realized like my original list had a ridiculous amount of big men on it, and just went, well, yeah, if it's that many, then there is some issue in terms of the value of the wings.
Yeah, and not only that, but I also think we've talked about this a little bit on some past programs, I think most recently on the awards pod, that I think wings have a little bit higher of a ceiling. Guys who can handle the ball regularly have a little bit higher of a ceiling than bigs do, just as far as being like some of the absolute best players in the NBA, where we've seen that. I'm not sure at this point, it's been quite a while now that a center has been the best player in the NBA, or even that a power forward has been the best player in the NBA, at least a traditional power forward. When, you know, if you're going to count LeBron James as a power forward, that's a little bit different, but we haven't seen really for quite some time, other than Blake Griffin in 2014, which was pointed out to me by a Twitter user, that those players are not really in the discussion for the MVP award. So that maybe is something to consider as well, in addition to the positional scarcity that you mentioned.
And along those lines, one of the stories of this season that we've talked about a fair amount, and it's very relevant to the top of this list, is how realistic is it for a player, even if they have the capability, to be a high usage big man and a defensive anchor? And yeah, that is a big part of the appeal for a couple of these top guys, is that they might be able to have it both ways. But if that's maybe not impossible, but improbable, that does decrease their value.
Yeah. Cousins, Towns, AD, all of them have really, those are probably your three highest usage bigs in the league these days. Maybe Blake Griffin is another one, but all those guys really have had their trouble being like great defensive players. And really the last bigs that we've seen that were two-way superstars, and maybe I'm forgetting someone, but it would be Dwight Howard back in his days with the Magic, and Tim Duncan would be the two that really pop out, as and KG, you know, even you got to go back to those type of guys. So the real true two-way superstar, maybe that's not possible, but if anything, it's very, very rare. And I think we should consider that as we're going through. Talk a little bit about some of the criteria. This is basically which players 23 or under, and we're just for convenience using their seasonal age as of February 1st, 2017, because that's how Basketball Reference does it. And I think the reason we do 23 is that's a year after you would be a senior in college. To me, just when I think about it, I know ESPN does it as under 25, but I think about it as when you say, hey, you know, he's doing this and he's only 23, or insert younger age here. Once you get above 23, I think you're getting pretty darn close to what you're going to be. It's hard to say, unless you're Jimmy Butler, that you're going to have another order of magnitude type of leap, even though players obviously get better from age 24 on a lot of the time. But I think of it as like, oh, this guy still has so much potential. I think you got to be 23 under. That's why I chose that age.
Yeah, I have no opposition to that at all. You know, I would be fine with it being 24, but anything above that, it's something different. Like, it's still young players, but since you use the term prospects, and you always have, I think that's what makes it a little bit different.
Yeah, so some other things to keep in mind here. Age is the most important variable in predicting your future performance on these lists in the draft, as well as really it's been proven that it just, if you're doing something at 19, it means much more than if you're doing the same thing at 22 or 23. So that's one thing to consider in our rankings. But another one that runs a little bit counter to that is certainty, right? If a player, an older player, has already reached a really high level, you know that he is capable of doing that. A younger guy might have a higher ceiling, but there's also the possibility that he might not ever even reach the level that the older player has reached. And, you know, he's navigated injuries when he was younger. He's usually, if you're at the higher end of this age range, you've shown at least that you can contribute somewhat to winning NBA basketball. There's a lot of guys like, you know, we can call this the Andrew Wiggins corollary, where you're putting up some numbers, but you're not necessarily playing winning NBA basketball because your floor game is somewhat deficient. So that's another thing to consider as well, that if you're older and doing something, there's a little bit of and you're doing more than someone who's younger, that means that you're really that gives some added value. We talked about the positional scarcity, the wings. And then for me, I like to put a premium on creating efficient shots for yourself and other as the premium skill in the NBA. I mean, there's a lot of great 3-and-D players. They're more important than ever. There's defense at the big position. If you're a bad defender at the big position, that's really going to hurt you in my rankings. But I still think that being a great offensive player is more valuable than being a great defensive player. And so that really goes in there. And then, of course, we're going to do the way we usually do it here with tiers. So if one guy is above someone else and they're in the same tier, it means we think that they're very close.
Yeah, and that's the same way I did mine as well.
We're also going to talk about where guys were last year, if they're still on the list, and assign them a rating for how well they've developed 1 through 10 over the past year. I think that's about it. I guess another thing that's important to remember here is that in the universe of these players, only 4 of these guys are in the top 40 in RPM. That's Giannis, Anthony Davis, Otto Porter, and Kristaps Porzingis. So still, we talk about how rookies are never good. Even guys who are a couple years into their career are young. Even they are still, it is very hard to be one of the best players in the NBA when you are this young.
And that gets into the idea of certainty too. Like if you have a guy who's already good and they're young, then that's a whole different thing than where you expect that they could be.
How do you feel about, I mean, obviously a guy like AD, he's a superstar, he's already achieved that. That's why he's going to be number one on the list, spoiler alert. But let's say you have, you know, a 23-year-old who's maturing into a solid starter, a Steven Adams, an Otto Porter type. How do you juxtapose them with a younger guy like, say, a Jamal Murray, who I think clearly has more upside than Steven Adams or Otto Porter, but he's far enough away that he may never achieve it. It's possible he might never even be as good as those guys are, even though he doesn't have the upside. Do you have any way of kind of saying which of those you kind of skew towards in these rankings?
I really do value ceiling, but not raw ceiling, like the absolute best case scenario, but like it's about the 80% scenario is something that I really like. Yeah. So a reasonable best case, and also the value of that. So if a player has that 80% scenario, is a really, really good player, a top 10 player, a top 5 player, that has substantially more value to me than a top 20 or a top 25, because that's a player that you can build around. That's a player who could be the best guy on a championship team. So I value that, if that's where the uncertainty goes, more. Of course, you also get into the ideas of positional scarcity and value. And one of the guys who we disagree on, and I won't spoil it, I think a lot of it is because I value that ceiling, I think, a little bit more than you do.
Yeah, I think in general, I do sort of, this is kind of a whimsical list. That's why I think we're so fascinated by this. That's why I kind of stole this idea from Baseball Prospectus and Football Outsiders, because it's really fun to just think about what young guys can be, try to extrapolate what they could be. And so I want to have at least a little of that in these guys. I want to see some plausible scenario that, like, oh wow, this guy could really just be unbelievable, like he could get into being a top 10 player or something like that, you know, to believe in that. I don't skew entirely that way, but I do kind of go that way a little bit. You may end up going more. We'll see whether I actually am adhering to this rubric. And also, let's say bon voyage to our graduates from the list. Only 5 players that were either, because we do the top 10 in tiers, and then we do honorable mention of the players who could realistically have been in consideration for the top 10, and then just some players to watch. And out of all of those categories, I think it was probably 25 players, only 5 of them have actually graduated. It shows really that they're, when I first did this list, this will now be the 3rd year, it wasn't nearly as jam-packed as that 2013 draft wasn't that great. 2012 was only okay. And also, like, one of the best players from 2012 was old, so he was off the list already, Dame Lillard, and another one, CJ McCollum, same thing from 2013. So we've lost Kyrie, who was number 2 last year. I think he more than validated that ranking with his past year. Rudy Gobert, number 9, he is now too old as well. I think what he's doing this year, that looks like a pretty decent pick, although there are some guys probably with even more upside than him now who have moved into this list. And then Jonas Valanciunas, Tobias Harris, and Victor Oladipo were all in the player to watch honorable mention categories, and they are now ineligible as well.
So one of the big discussion points for me with this, and one of the things that I struggled with the most, was whether tier 1 is 1 player or 2. I think anybody would probably know who those two players are, but how did you make that decision?
Well, one of the big discussion points for me is actually going to be Stan Sox. So I will answer that question as soon as we tell you about them. We are so glad to have them back, actually. This is just Stan Sox. You know them as the official sock provider of the NBA. They actually were on the show around this time last year. One of my favorite companies, just what they've done with NBA socks. It used to just be these white socks that by all accounts were very comfortable, but didn't really look that cool. Now they really have taken the style to a new level. They sent me some originally. They sent me a few more with this new campaign, but I also have bought probably at least that many socks on my own. I probably own like 15 pairs of Stan socks now. And they have just the NBA socks, like the game socks are awesome. Like I play in those all the time. Those are really cool. They look good. They've got extra padding that really helps. I don't get any blisters. The moisture wicking is excellent there also. So, I mean, I've got a pair of the Bulls game socks, Warriors, Hawks, Knicks. Like the Knicks ones are pretty cool. It's got like an N on the back of the left ankle and a Y on the back of the right ankle. Just go on to Stan Sox and check them out. You'll just go down the rabbit hole and find all these awesome ones. And then my favorite ones, probably the ones that you really enjoy too, are the old team ones. Those are badass.
Yeah, those are beautiful. And they've done a great job of replicating the style and also just making them really distinctive. And that's, I think, part of what I like the most about them is that they represent the teams well, but they also look just awesome.
Yeah, I've got the Bulls, old Bulls ones with that Chicago script, the old Nuggets ones with that skyline and the rainbow. I've actually gotten a lot of compliments on those. And I've had to up my sock game too, because my girlfriend is part Asian. And so we go there and you obviously have to take your shoes off as soon as you walk in. And so like now I actually am getting compliments on those socks instead of like just my ratty old like white socks that I used to wear. The Clippers ones, the old like San Diego Clippers ones are really beautiful too. They're like this orange and light blue. Got a pair of the Sonics ones too. Shout out to KP. They really like the style of them. Like they almost have like this retro style just to the sock and the colors in addition to the logos. I just want to just go on to stance.com. Check them out. My girlfriend has a bunch of ones that she really likes too. There's the Star Wars collection that Danny has. Music Legends. I mean, basically anything awesome that can be in a sock, stance.com has them. Stance, the uncommon thread. And also for people who ask, no discount code for this one. Just go check out stance.com and find yourself something for the holiday season. Great gifts for men, women, or children. Okay, so what was the question you asked me again?
Whether tier one is one individual or two individuals.
Well, this will be very interesting. It is one for me. That is Anthony Davis. He is 23. This will be his last year on this list. He turns 24 in March. I only gave him a 5 for his past year of development, but he was also by himself in tier one as well. And while he did have a bit of a down year at times last year, I mean, what he's doing, he's leading the league in PER this year. Was basically a one-man team in New Orleans. I do think he still has that great defensive potential, although we haven't seen it yet. I mean, that's really the biggest reason I gave him a 5. He had that injury scare, but he's come back just as strong. Not quite doing as much at the basket this year as we've seen in the past, but because he has to create the shot so often, I think that's a big part of that. And he's not doing as much on the offensive glass because they're just trying to get back in transition more, which they actually have succeeded at. So I think I still think it is possible that now, I mean, that 14-15 season and the season that he's on pace for right now, it's possible that he already will have had two seasons by the end of this year that's better than anyone else on this list will ever have. That's why I had him in tier one. The other guys are just a little bit too far away. Great potential, though, they do possess.
Something to remember about this is that Towns last year had a year that was fairly similar in a lot of ways to what Anthony Davis did, but last year was not Anthony Davis's best year. So you're not comparing apples to apples in that way. I put them in the same tier because of the idea of potential outcomes. And while getting to where Davis is now would be a great career for anybody, and that includes Karl Anthony Towns, there are a couple of possibilities now where I think he could outpace him. And while that doesn't put Towns above him because of the idea of uncertainty, to me it does put them in the same tier. And also, I'm becoming less comfortable with the idea that Davis is going to be the dominant defender we all hoped he would be. Some of that is just natural due to the offensive workload that he has, but I have more confidence in, this is an idea of where certainty can actually hurt a guy, I'm the uncertainty with Towns' defense, even though I will admit I got into a little bit of a back and forth with Bob Vigaris on Twitter Twitter over the summer about Towns' defense. I overrated him at that time. I still think he has potential long term. So I have them in the same tier, but have the same order.
Part of my concern about Towns is that it seems like Tibbs is just always going to be playing too big there. They've committed.
See, I don't care about that at all.
Well, I mean, there's a number of reasons why it is cause for concern for me. Number one is he's just not going to, I mean, the player that you are inherently versus what you do on the court, those are obviously two different things, how you're being used. But when you consider his development, he usually is guarding the power forward on the other team while Jang guards the center. So he's not looking like he's going to get a chance to develop those great center defensive skills that had us so excited early on last year when we did this list. And he also is just not going to be able to like get into the post and beast guys nearly as much either, because there's not going to be the spacing around him. And, you know, they've also got Rubio on the team. I mean, they may figure out how to use him. I'm not that worried about it. He's still number two on the list for me, although I actually struggled with whether to make him number two. But yeah, I think he's just is clearly, I mean, AD, look at what AD was doing when he was 21, which was basically, I think, that 14-15 season versus what Towns is doing right now. And, you know, I think there's not really much of a comparison there. And then AD, I think, is even a little bit better this year, certainly offensively. So that's why I could understand having them in the same tier. But this is really where I want to go next. I was very close. My second tier is Towns at two and Giannis at three. I was very close to actually putting Giannis above Karl Towns.
What gave me pause about doing that, and I considered it for a second as well, was what figuring out what Giannis is defensively. Like, offensively, he's an incredible player and he could be a game changer in a lot of different ways, but I'm sitting there going, well, what is he best? Like, where is he best suited? And with Towns, it's so simple to kind of piece together what his best form is, and that uncertainty with me makes me uncomfortable because it makes it harder for a coach to figure out as well.
Well, I mean, he is let's see, fifth in the league in defensive RPM right now. Again, a very noisy stat at this point in the year, but what he's been able to do protecting the rim, getting steals, he's going to get stronger too. I think he's going to be at the point where he can guard 1 through 5 very soon if he's not there already. He certainly can play a defensive role, already is playing a defensive role similar to what Kevin Durant is doing in Golden State. I really am a believer in his defense. I think the only thing that you worry about with him is, does he have enough moves? You know, does he really have like shake to get by guys? And then his jumper, but he's taking strides in there. I gave him a 10 for his past year development. He was actually only number 8 last year on the list. It moved up to number 3. He's 11 months older than Towns, and overall in RPM right now in the league, he's 14th. Towns isn't even on the first page at the moment. And again, RPM is not the be all end all, especially at this point in the season. But Giannis is contributing to winning basketball. Giannis is, I think, a top 15 player in the league so far this year. He was very close to getting onto our All-NBA team. He made mine. It was the one omission on yours. And again, there's also the positional scarcity as a wing, as a guy who can switch, as a guy you can give the ball to whenever you want, who can be a one-man fast break. Also, like, all of that, it's really, like, as I'm saying this, I'm like almost talking myself into it. It's just, I think we're just a little bit too down on Towns now just because of this rough start that the Wolves have had. But I mean, Giannis is so much better of a player right now than Towns, and only being 11 months older, you know, it really made me think about it in terms of just like actual contribution to winning. I think Towns, you know, could be a much better scorer for sure, could be a great defender, but Giannis is a much better defensive player right now. And it's just, he's closer to being a really good player, and Towns, you know, is not there yet.
What I struggle with a little bit with him, it's along the same lines as the defensive thing, is let's imagine him in a playoff series against an elite small forward. Would you want him guarding that guy? Would you feel comfortable with it if that's what needs to happen? And B, would you feel comfortable? A lot of those guys are great two-way players. How would Giannis fare with that person on him?
I think I would be comfortable probably with him playing at the four. And this partnership with Jabari is an interesting one. And the Bucks don't have a ton of shooting around him. And I would like to see like a little bit different personnel around him. I think like Jason Kidd, I think, has been good in helping him develop, but also kind of jacks guys around a little bit in the rotation. I think that him playing the four, especially in this modern NBA, especially in the East, is just fine. And then that maybe, especially when you have guys who really want to ISO down the end of the game, you know, like a LeBron or a DeMar DeRozan, someone that he can just, because he's not very good at getting around screens. That's like his big weakness. So he kind of has to switch. But if he switches on to guys, I think in a one-on-one ISO situation, he can be really awesome. And then what he can do protecting the rim, defensive rebounding, the steals that he gets, all that stuff, I think is really, I'm just very excited about his potential as a defensive player. I think he could be, you know, a top 10 defensive player in the year at some point.
He could end up becoming a great pre-switch guy if he's at the four, was something that we've seen the Warriors do a little bit now, of trying to basically to get him into the pick and roll and switch onto that small in those kind of late shot clock situations. I think he would be great at that eventually and really do that. I don't love him as that one-on-one defender on a Durant, LeBron type guy, and he doesn't have to be third on this list. You know, this is his offensive value, and his unusual nature gets him here anyway. But if he can do that, then you start talking about somebody who could actually win MVP.
As long as the guy isn't too quick, because like if you like get him going one way and cross him over, you can get some separation against him. But I think if it's not necessarily that type of guy, if it's a Carmelo, this version of LeBron slowing down a little bit, KD, I think has a nice crossover, but he's, you know, I think someone that Giannis can guard reasonably well. The type of guy who's not going to just blow by him, I think he can already be very effective, and I think he's also only going to get better. But that's probably enough on him. So you had him then in your tier three. My tier three consisted of Kristaps Porzingis at age 21, number four, and Joel Embiid at age 22, number five. I originally actually had Porzingis in the second tier, and I just knocked him down just a little bit because I still wonder about him. He's been protecting the rim very well, but I just wonder if he can really play center. And then I think with his speed, he could be a liability still a little bit at the four. And then his ability to create his own shot against smaller players, I think he's going to be awesome. Don't get me wrong. But I think that those are things that could limit his upside just a little bit and maybe put him in this next tier. What do you think of all that?
I made the same separation just for a small bit of clarity. We're actually the same numbers in terms of tiers. I just have Towns in tier one and Giannis alone in tier two. And then Porzingis, Embiid, I was making the same decision and made the same choice and the separation. The reason why I separated was really certainty. It was the idea that Giannis, we know what he is. And this year, especially, he has proven that he can do this in a high stakes circumstance if you give him the keys. Porzingis might be able to do what he's doing now with a much higher usage. I expect that he could, but expectation and knowledge are very, very different things. And his value as a defensive center is something that we're arguing more in the abstract now. And I'm not as comfortable arguing that in the abstract. As good as he can be as a four and as good as he can be as a five, that's something very different than Giannis. And it is more speculative in a way that Embiid is as well, where Embiid has been very, very good for these 20 or whatever games. He hasn't played all of them, but he still has a lot to prove. He still has rust to wear off. And so I liked pairing them together, and it's something that I did too.
Yeah. What rating 1 through 10 would you give Porzingis for like how well he's developed over the past year? Remember, we did this in December of last year. So he probably tailed off a little bit from December to the end of last year. But so if you're looking at it from that lens, but then, he's been very good this year until like the last few games. What do you think of that?
7 or 8. He's doing a better job of getting himself into situations where he can succeed. Some of that is also the coaching change. While it's not imperfect, it's better than things were. But his activity offensively has been better. He's not doing, last year when we had this conversation, he was still in the midst of doing that crazy double of making a bunch of threes and being really good on the offensive glass. And it was always dubious if that was going to continue. It hasn't really. But his defense got better over the course of the year from what I remember. And I think it's been a little bit better this year. So yeah. 7 or 8, if both those would be fine. I would maybe lean a little bit more towards the 7, but I wouldn't quibble with an 8.
Yeah, that's what I gave him, was an 8. And the thing that I've been most encouraged with is how he's been able to really discover his touch in the short, kind of within 10 feet area, and on non-dunks right around the rim. He's been using the glass extremely well. He's among the lead leader in made bank shots. He might even be the league leader in that from that left wing. He's been on fire there.
He's also gotten better with the ball in his hands, which is a notable thing in terms of his eventual offensive development, like just like a dribble or two and making a move. That was something he's doing a lot more now than he was then.
And for Embiid, I mean, again, this will give you an idea of where this list was 2 years ago compared to now. I actually ranked him number 10 right after the 2014 draft, and that was with knowing he was going to miss a year. And then he dropped off the list last year after, you know, missing his second year in a row. But you have to give him a 10 now to even to be number five. I think for him, I still want to see him for real. Like, so much of this is based on upside, and he is 22 already. That's a little bit later than some of these other guys, but he has been an effective player when he's been on the floor. His box score numbers are outstanding. I want to see, you know, how he really looks in the post in more of a real system, how he looks with Simmons, that kind of stuff. But and then defensively, his shot blocking, I think, has been amazing. Again, he's another one of these guys where probably not going to keep up this. I don't know what his usage is at now, but it was at 40% like a couple of weeks ago.
He's at 51% in crunch time too.
And did you give him any kind of a discount for the potential of future injury?
A little bit, sure, because that is a very real part of his projection, is that he provides no value during that time. And that was a part of what put Porzingis over him, that and Porzingis's offensive versatility. But what intrigues me so much about Embiid is that he is very much two different players in one, and it's what I like so much about him compared to other guys. So defensively, he's more that standard rim protecting center, where he can, I trust that he's going to be a good rim protector and also a steady defensive rebounder. He's not elite in terms of that right now, but he's good enough. And so you have that, and I believe in that as a piece. Offensively, I don't know what the heck he's going to be, but he has the tools to do a lot of different things well, and I don't see that as a downside at all. His three-point shooting this year has been way better than I expected it to be at this point in his career. Even if he had been healthy, it's better than I expected. His post-game has been rustier, but what is good there is that if you can sand off the edges, you can make that work. A lot of the turnovers he has, will get better with time and by lowering his usage, because his usage should not be as high as it is. So those disparate offensive skills over time and experience can be coalesced into a better offensive player than I expected before.
Where would you rank his upside among some of the players on this list?
He is a guy who's traditional fives are something that I absolutely love. I mean, going back, even though he wasn't listed as a five for years, Tim Duncan is somebody who I really thought was so important to what the Spurs did. But what makes like Giannis special is that he can be the primary ball handler and be potentially a very good defender. And those guys are so much harder to find. Like, you can get 75% of what Embiid will end up doing on defense in another guy. And yeah, you get in a worse offensive package. So I would say in terms of ceiling, he's probably number five on this list. Maybe six. There's one guy below him that I'd have in there too.
Yeah, I might put him ahead of Porzingis in terms of ceiling. I would not have him AD, Towns, and Giannis. And I mean, Giannis is younger than Embiid. Giannis like just turned 22 a few days ago, and he's already way better than Embiid is. So that's, I think what he's done this year has just been outstanding. And maybe that's going to drop off a little bit, but I don't see anything watching him. It's like, oh, that's unsustainable. All right, so you're now, Embiid was like tier four for you?
Tier three. I have the same tier numbers as you. I just have a different tier.
Okay. Tier two. All right, so here was my tier four, and this is where it really started to get difficult for me to differentiate between these guys. I had four people in this tier. 21-year-old Andrew Wiggins, who was fifth last year. He's now sixth, and Embiid jumped him. A lot of these guys are, and then Jabari Parker, age 21, last year he was sixth, he is now seventh, and Parker was somewhat controversial for me being sixth at that point. That was kind of a vanity pick for me. I'm guessing you're probably going to have Jabari lower. We'll see. But I think he's done pretty well over the, because remember, he was like just coming back from the ACL surgery at this time last year. And then I had 20-year-old Ben Simmons, who has a somewhat of a later birthday, actually. Like, he turns 21 in July. And then Andre Drummond, not really in the same category as the rest of these guys. I think Wiggins, Parker, and Ben Simmons have a lot of similarities between them. Drummond is just kind of like, well, you know, he's 23. He's been pretty good. He was actually number four last year because he was playing really well at the start of last year, and then it's kind of dropped off a little since then. So I think I just kind of didn't really have anywhere else to put him, so I put him in the same tier, but he's not really like the other guys.
So would you rather hear that I have a different order? I have all those guys in my next tier. Would you rather hear the different order or the one extra guy that I have in there?
Let's hear the extra guy, because I don't think the order of these guys matters that much.
My extra guy is Miles Turner. I have Turner in this group, and the reason why Turner is in this group...
Yeah, you did your list after he had 5 threes tonight,
didn't you? No, I did it. I did my list this morning. I had to think about Turner versus Drummond, and that's what got Turner on the list was...
Yeah.
I was sitting there going, I can't put Drummond on the list and Turner not, because I'm putting Turner over Drummond. And so that was one of the catalysts for me, because he's not perfect defensively. And a big part of what Drummond does that scares me moving forward, and I've been wrong about this before, like with Russell Westbrook, that a physically dominant player who doesn't have a high skill level, and Russ, of course, has a way higher skill level than Drummond.
Or necessarily a high IQ either, frankly.
Drummond might not age well. And we've seen with rebounding that rebounding generally starts dropping off early. And that is such a huge part of what Drummond does at this point, that is a huge gulf between them. Drummond is the best rebounder in the league, one of the best defensive rebounders, a great offensive rebounder too. Turner is not, partially because he shot block hunts, but he's going to get better at that. And Turner's offensive potential is miles and, oh wow, I just realized that's kind of a pun, is substantially better than Drummond in just about every way. Kilometers ahead. And so what that does is it gives him a much higher ceiling. And Drummond has been somewhat of a disappointment defensively. He's not bad, but he's not dominant in a way that I hope for. So I'm not sitting there going, oh, well, you're losing that upside with Drummond. So I put Turner over Drummond, and that made him be one of my 10 guys.
Yeah, Drummond to me is a very difficult prospect to evaluate. In a lot of ways, it seems like he's been the same guy since he got into the league, with just incremental improvements in his defense. I mean, one of the things that we talked about a little earlier on a mailbag was that they're much better defensively when he's off the court, although a lot of that seems to just be bad luck. But, you know, he's not there yet as a great defensive player. Offensively, he's good in the pick and roll. He's not, doesn't quite have like the elite athleticism of like a Dwight Howard type, but still very good. And yeah, it's unless he turns into a top 10 defensive player in the league, which is getting more and more removed, I'm kind of talking myself out of having him on this list, to be honest, because I feel like his improvement is so incremental that maybe he just doesn't have enough upside. But, you know, as a 23-year-old, I mean, he made the All-Star team last year, right?
I think so. I
mean, not that that is the be-all end-all, especially in the East, but it's tough.
And it's tough considering, yeah. I think we were both thinking the next guy is somebody who is so far away from where Drummond is right now. I think we have the same guy. I have him 11th, you have him 10th, that I couldn't put him over Drummond, even though I like him better.
Yeah, for me, the reason I didn't have Turner in there is I just worry a little bit too much about his rebounding. I think he can be pretty good offensively, but it's just too much potential for me with him right now. He's got great flashes, shot blocking. He's a great shooter. He has a lot of things that he really needs to improve, like a lot of areas to improve. Like, yeah, he has shooting potential, but he does still have to get better as a shooter to really be, you know, the 5 threes tonight helps. But to really be a guy where you're like, all right, this guy is a huge offensive weapon, because he's not really that great offensively other than his jump shot.
Well, there's a big line between huge offensive weapon and what Andre Drummond is now. I mean, he doesn't have to be that much. He doesn't have to be that great on offense to make that difference up, especially if I believe that Turner is a farther from his defensive ceiling substantially than Drummond is. And so he can make up that gap. I was also really impressed. It's one of those few things that we have a different sample on. He looked like he belonged at Team USA stuff, Turner did. And when you saw the talent that was on the floor, then you're sitting there going, like, every once in a while you'd be like, wow, who is that? And you remember it and just that kind of angle. And that matters, because even though they're just messing around a lot of the time, it is high-end competition. And those are some of the best athletes in the world. And he looked good there. So yeah, I had Turner in and I had him over Drummond. And the other one that I want to talk about is, I'm amused significantly that I have Jabari over where you do, even though I think you're higher on him than I am. And the reason for that is because I am lower on Andrew Wiggins. Wiggins has a spectacular ceiling, but maybe it's covering Harrison Barnes since his rookie year, but I'm sitting there wondering why he gets so much credit for things that he's not doing yet when a lot of other guys don't, when they're at this point in their career. He's gotten a lot better, but he hasn't defensively, and I don't believe that he can be, or that there's a reasonable chance, he certainly could be, it's always a chance of this, the best offensive player on a good team. And so if he can't be the best defensive player and he can't be the best offensive player, that's a different guy.
So you had Parker at 6 and Wiggins at 7, is that right?
No, I had Parker at 6, Ben Simmons at 7, Turner at 8, Wiggins at 9.
Interesting. And then Drummond was 10,
at 10.
For you?
Yeah.
Yeah. To finish up on Turner, I think there's a very reasonable argument that he should be above Drummond. I wouldn't put him above Wiggins, Parker, or Simmons necessarily, although I certainly share the same disappointments in Wiggins as you do. And I think a lot of my Wiggins love is still kind of based more on what other people think than what I necessarily think. And that's always been the case in some ways. Like I have to at least acknowledge that. But, you know, I kind of want, like, he's the category of player that I just naturally don't really care for that much. You know, just only scores. That's about it. You know, doesn't have great feel, like that kind of guy. And so I think I'm naturally predisposed not to like those guys as much, and so I cede to the majority opinion to try to knock out my own biases in some ways. But back to Turner, I think it's just defensively too, he just has a long way to go there. Defensive rebounding, I don't know that he's ever really going to be a good defensive rebounder. That's the type of thing where you're kind of good at it right away or you're not. I mean, he could get better, he could get stronger maybe, but and his shot blocking is great, but he doesn't have the greatest feet in pick and roll. I mean, that's one thing that Drummond definitely has, is much better feet than Turner does. Not necessarily the strongest guy. You still worry a little bit about some of those injury issues, although he hasn't, not even injury issues, but just that he's not that strong. He kind of has that odd gait, that kind of thing. But certainly understandable to me that he would be in there. What about Ben Simmons? Is there anything to say about him? Is it because he hasn't even had his debut yet? There are some worrisome signs about his complete inability to shoot. He's a very unique player. We don't know what he's going to be defensively either. He has some potential, but not a lot of length. Has never really defended at any point in his career other than the first game of Summer League where he immediately got cramps because he's like never gotten into a defensive stance before. Is it too early to have him in this range?
No, it isn't, because he's that kind of a talent as a passer. And so when I was walking my dog today, I was actually trying to work out a thought experiment. And here's what I came up with. How valuable do you think a player who was close to Draymond Green on offense and slightly below average on defense, if you were to just throw that player, let's say they're being not maximized, but properly utilized. I think that player is incredibly valuable. They're not perfect, but they're still really useful.
Yeah. Although the fact that Green can shoot, and we don't know that Simmons is ever going to be able to shoot, is a big thing where, you know, Green is not taking anything off the table when he doesn't have the ball in his hands. And I think Simmons, my big worry is that he could be one of those players. I mean, the most damning comparison of Simmons is that he would be, you know, a 6'10 Rondo, which could be a really good player, to be sure.
A 6'10 Rondo would be a lot better than a 6'2 Rondo. Like, that's just, it's just the functional value of size, because what Rondo doesn't bring is more of a problem, because you have to get that from other positions. You're used to doing that with the 6'10 guy. And one of the big differences, why I use the Draymond comparison, and you're right to bring up shooting, but I have much more confidence, not only that he can, but that he will be used as a guy who initiates pick and rolls, which is something Draymond should do more than he is, partially because the Warriors have all these other guys who can do it. But Simmons getting that opportunity, you're creating mismatches all over the floor, and it's a lot easier to create those mismatches when you're doing that at the three or the four, because they can, with a creative coach, like if you have a stout enough guy, if they run a 4-2 pick and roll, there aren't, even if he can't shoot, there aren't many ways that you can handle that, because he can be a good enough post-up guy on that switch. And so teams can utilize that well, especially if he's going to be their primary ball handler. And while I don't think he should be guarding point guards, if they're going to treat him that way, he's going to create those mismatches anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I had him at number 8 too. Now, this next tier, I really, you know, someone had to be 10 because I only had 9 in my first 4 tiers. This next tier, I really include all of the honorable mentions in here. And as you get down to this level, it becomes much harder to differentiate between the players. I mean, that's just the nature of evaluating NBA basketball and a lot of things, that like the absolute best, it's going to be the type of thing where the difference between 1 and 2 is much greater than the difference between 10 and 11. I had Jamal Murray as I guess you had Miles Turner above Jamal Murray. This is much like Parker was for me last year, a vanity pick. The statistical analysis would not support this at this point. I mean, he hasn't been an effective player this year. He's gone off. He's had, you know, some big games, a lot of it just in garbage time. But just watching the guy, I think his upside, just with the moves that he has and the shooting stroke that he has, he's going to suck on defense, probably, at least on ball. Off ball, I think he can be good. But the moves that he has, I think he just has the upside to be, like, you know, the closest thing that we've seen in the league to Steph Curry that isn't Steph Curry. And he has got more size than Steph Curry, too.
I love Jamal. Big fan of him. He was 11th on my list. And this group contains a lot of guys that I would say are parallels to each other, and that was a good clarifying exercise for me just in terms of how I think about the league. So Jamal, I had kind of thinking about him along with D'Angelo Russell, who they're not the same player, but they have some similar strengths and weaknesses. And for either one of them, they're game changers if they can shoot pull-ups reliably off the pick and roll. If they can do that, then all of a sudden that's what one of the things that Steph and Damian Lillard do.
I think Jamal has a way higher upside than D'Angelo
Russell. So do I. That's why I had him. I had him above, but it's similar types of guys, and they need to do the same thing to succeed. Russell, I like a little bit better as a facilitator, just in the sense of not as in terms of his passing toolbox, but just in making the decisions and everything else like that. But Jamal is more versatile. I like him off ball better than I like D'Angelo off ball. And that makes sense. He's, I think, and the size part of it, you know, it's not a big deal either way. So with those guys, and then I think this tees up for the other big clarifying one for me was Bradley Beal and Zach LaVine and Devin Booker, because those guys are all, like, they're very different physically, but in terms of their real role on an NBA team, they're not that far apart.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. The difference there is that Devin Booker hasn't actually ever made three-pointers in the NBA. You know, he's like a 32% or something career three-point shooter, and I think it's going to be hard for him to be efficient. He also is probably by far the worst on defense, both in terms of his potential and his actual results so far. LaVine, as a player just who can get so hot and go off, his ability in transition is ridiculous. Some of the separation that he got in that Warriors game last night to get open for jumpers, it was really pretty remarkable. But then Beal is older than those guys, and he is actually... he's actually taken all of the steps that we wanted him to take. We talked about that in the 15 and 60 last night. He was number 10 last year. I think he got bumped out a little bit. I had him kind of behind Turner and Murray, but you know, he's taking incremental steps forward in everything that you would have wanted. And I think he's by far the best defender out of those three guys. I mean, that's damning with faint praise to be sure, but he's actually
probably the best facilitator at this point in their careers.
Yeah. As a guy on the pick and roll who can actually make some passes. That's probably right.
The way I wanted to ask this to you was, okay, so let's say what Beal's doing so far is real or close to it. Like, this is where he ends up the season. I think that would be a pretty great result for Zach LaVine. It's not his ceiling, because LaVine's athleticism is at a different level, and I think he could become a good defender if everything else worked out. But Beal is at a point now, like, if this is where it is, that LaVine, this would be a great Zach LaVine career.
Well, and LaVine, just for whatever reason, he uses his athleticism to get his jumper off whenever he wants and to get out in transition. But in the half court, he really just doesn't get to the basket very much. You know, and part of that, I think, has been due to the fact there's not a ton of spacing on these teams that he's been on. But he's never really done that even in his college career either. So that's something that's... And none of these guys really are amazing getting all the way to the rim either. But I think just Beal's ability to be more efficient, granted he's 2 years older, 3 years older than Devin Booker. I mean, you remember Devin Booker just turned 20 in October of this year. He was the youngest guy in that 2015 draft class. So that's something. But Booker has, I think, kind of stagnated a little bit. We may have gotten a little too excited by his raw totals. And it doesn't seem like it in Phoenix. He's in the greatest situation to improve
in
so
his
far.
Summer league. Like, he killed it summer league, but then we remembered, it's summer league.
Let's talk about the other guys who are in this group here. Maybe we can just shift it into bigs. The only Turner we already talked about, Jokic and Steven Adams were the other two bigs that I had in this group. Adams was unranked last year, as was Jokic. Jokic at 21, Steven Adams is 23. Adams, again, probably the lowest upside of anyone that we've discussed so far, but a guy who is a solid starter, has some upside to improve even defensively, and, you know, just someone who I think is going to be a solid player for a long time. Probably never going to make an all-star team in his career, but, you know, he got that contract extension for a reason. And he's got the capability to be, you know, one of the five best defensive centers in the league, and then a solid guy posting up on mismatches or finishing in the pick and roll. So that's just more of a certainty pick. It's kind of a boring pick, but just where he is already at 23, what he showed in the playoffs last year, I thought he deserved to be in there, even if it's not incredibly sexy.
Certainly fair. And Jokic is just so fascinating to me because he might not ever be what I like a center defensively, but his offensive capability is just so fun and so awesome that if he can be used properly, it's productive in a very different way, but I think it's legitimate.
Yeah, and Jokic, you know what? There are five in the top 40 in RPM that are on this list, because Jokic is actually now up again to 37. I think Jokic, again, doesn't have the upside on either end to really be a guy who's going to create shots, but he is just such a wonderful offensive player with his passing, his shooting, which hasn't been that great this year. And anytime he gets the ball in the post against a mismatch, he scores on that guy, like, or forces a double team. He can't really post up against guys his size very well, but to have a guy who can be awesome in pick and pop, can pick you apart in the passes, and then can post up when you try to switch him in pick and pop, and that's a really, really valuable offensive player. And then defensively, the numbers have been good on him. He knows the angles. He's also actually pretty good on the offensive glass too at times when he has a switch on offense. But yeah, defensively, I just wonder a little bit more. I mean, if he were a guy who could be, I think, like a solidly above average defensive center, and I really believed in his athleticism a little bit more other than just his intelligence, then, you know, he would be in the top 10 for me. But that's the reason that he is not there. But he obviously has developed quite well over the past year. You know, you would have to give him a 10 for his development over this time. What I want to ask you, though, this, with both he and Murray, I worry a little bit about this Denver situation. Like, Jokic is just better than Nurkic is. Nurkic is still starting. He's going to bitch about coming off the bench. That's why, I mean, they're in this situation now where they're playing Jokic like 16 minutes to end each half because, you know, he's clearly better, but they're not starting him. Murray, if he were just given the keys to the car the way someone like even, you know, Emmanuel Mudiay was last year for this team, or, you know, the way even Russell was, despite his angst with Byron Scott. But, you know, he's coming off the bench, he's playing shooting guard. I want to see him with the ball in his hands more. He's coming off of staggered screens a lot, which he can do. But I worry that maybe both of these guys are not going to quite be able to scrape their ceiling anytime soon because of this overcrowded situation that they're in Denver.
We're both worried. It's a concern for me. It's also the fun of talking with Adam Morris a lot.
Because Jamal Murray is way higher upside than anyone else in that backcourt. Like, they got to just, like,
yeah, Mudiay.
You know, Jameer Nelson, Mudiay is having a rough year. You know, Will Barton, fine, that's great. But, like, you got to start starting this guy pretty soon. And you got to start Jokic, especially as now they're really getting into the situation where they're under 20% playoff odds. Like, let's see if one of those two guys can become a star, if not a superstar, because those are the two guys on this team to me that have by far the highest ceilings.
I wonder if what happened in Sacramento is really hurting Malone in terms of that, just because of the idea that he had this team that had expectations and everything fell apart and he ended up becoming a scapegoat for it, I think unfairly. And so that was a short dip and it really doomed him. Whereas with this team, assuming ownership is at least slightly patient, going with the long view for this season would be very helpful. Running Murray, Jokic pick and rolls as much as humanly possible would be very helpful. But he's just a little bit too impatient and trying out these other things. But
I think it's more of a like veterans on the team ego type of thing than it necessarily and you know, earn your stripes, wait your turn type
that's
of thing
possible
than it is, like, job fear.
That's possible. It's hard to know, and he has been willing to bench guys like Fareed. I mean, granted, he's a free
yeah, like one game, but yeah.
So we'll see. I am concerned.
It'll work out. I mean, we don't need to make this like the Denver Nuggets podcast. Let's see. So who else was here on this list? We also had D'Angelo Russell as really the only point guard, actually, in the honorable mentions. And then on the wing, Jaylen Brown and Brandon Ingram. Do you quibble with the inclusion of any of those guys? And remember, the idea here for honorable mention was you can make an argument for them actually being in that 10th spot. Instead of Jamal Murray, at least in my parlance, you had Turner above him. But
it's a little bit of a stretch for me, but not so much, especially considering the line between honorable mention and players to watch is pretty fuzzy. You know, they would both, yeah. They would be the best players in one or the worst players in the other. I have no real problem with that. Did you have, just because I enjoy making you go through this, did you have a real preference in terms of Brown versus Ingram at this point?
If they were the same age, I would have said Brown, but Brown is almost a year older than Ingram is. He was an old freshman and when he was drafted, Brandon Ingram was a young guy. He's the youngest guy on this list. September 1997 birthday. It doesn't turn 20 until next September. Braun has shown some stuff. He also has shown some warts. I mean, he's been getting some minutes for the Celtics. He's been okay. I another one of these guys like Murray, but not quite as much, where you just wonder if he were having a more typical rookie experience, whether we would feel better about him or not. If he, I mean, he's run like five pick and rolls all year, you know, on synergy that he's finished, you know, it's mostly pretty much all of his possessions are spot up plays where someone else gets penetration or getting out in transition. You know, he's not really being asked to do anything with the ball in his hands. I actually went back and watched all of his assists. He has had a couple of really nice assists, but most of it's just kind of pretty basic stuff. And then Ingram, I worry about his inability to get to the rim. But I think his shooting has been fine. Luke Walton really trusts him. His defense has been probably better than I would have expected at this point. And again, he's only 19. Like, he hasn't looked that athletic is really my only stumbling block with him. So I still think it's pretty too close to call there. I would probably just go with my initial evaluation with Jaylen Brown, but it's tough with Brown because he's basically being asked to go out there and not screw up for 6 minutes and a half right now.
I've been impressed with both of them with the ball in their hands. It doesn't happen a ton, but I've thought they've both shown good judgment, and at a forward spot, whichever one they end up defending long term, that's a really nice thing to have. Even if you just get to that level, they make good decisions. They can't get a ton of separation, but they can do well. I've appreciated Jaylen Brown in transition, much like you did in the Draft Prospect podcast when we argued for like 20 minutes about Jaylen Brown. But I like both of those guys quite a bit. And yeah, as I said, if they weren't in this list, they would be the top of the next one.
Which of these guys, you already have Turner above Murray, which of these guys would give you the most pause that you think has the best argument for being above Murray? I mean, I don't think any of them, like, I don't see.
No. And that's part of the reason why the construct of honorable mention is kind of hard this year, especially considering I had a pretty clear line there. But I think if I had to boil it down, it'd probably be D'Angelo Russell, even though he hasn't been what I thought, just because if he can reach it, it's such an important part of any successful team. And there is such scarcity among young guys who do that. As weak as the wings are, look at this list and just how many, there are a couple of bigs that can run an offense, but there aren't many of those nominal point guards.
Yeah, he's just too slow to me, and he can't jump, and he sucks on defense. Like, I don't think any of those things are going to go away. And that's my biggest problem with him. I mean, I think Murray has more quickness. He's got more moves. I think he's probably a better shooter. He's got a more versatile jump shot that he can get off. Much better finisher at the rim. Much better at getting to the rim. And a year younger as well. You know, again, we've seen Russell B have some times where he's been really effective as the point guard on a team. We don't know yet that Murray can do that. He has not been put in that role. He's been piling up his numbers in garbage time. This is just, hey, I've seen these flashes and I'm, you know, enraptured by them. I mean, I think it's very possible that Jamal Murray could fail. But I think his upside to me is by far the highest of any of these guys. And that's why I had him up there. I mean, if I had to pick one, oh man, I guess it would still be Jaylen Brown, just because, again, I think he has the highest upside of any of these guys. I think he has a long way to go. It's very likely that he's not going to realize it, but just, I think his athleticism, the moves that he has, his physical tools defensively, I think that all of that stuff, I would still put him as the next guy. But again, that's kind of more of a vanity pick. Like, there hasn't been anything in his statistical resume so far that would support that.
Do you want to talk players to watch?
Yeah. Who would you have had in this honorable mention category? Is there anyone that I missed?
No, there's one. I thought for a hot second about Nerlens, but he hasn't proven it defensively in the same way that Steven Adams has. Like, he's a guy who could jump into honorable mention or even outside chance into the top 10, depending on what happens to him as a free agent.
Noel could easily be a top 40, even a top 30 player in the league, probably not above that. But, I think a very realistic path for him to get there too. He just gets some alley-oops, throws some passes from the high post or as the role man on pick and roll. And then he just switches everything, blocks every shot, you know, switches or closes out to the perimeter and just, you know, he could be the best defensive player in the league someday still. Like, that's possible.
Certainly.
For him.
Yeah, and that was something. So when I was going through this exercise, and also Nerlens is a month younger than Joel Embiid. Like, he's a young guy still. And he's that class between Davis and Towns. And he could certainly get there. You do worry about the injuries. I like Clint Capella a lot. Like, I think there's a chance. But again, he has to prove it a little bit more this year. Like, he's somebody who, if he puts together a good sample, he's going to have a much more favorable circumstance this year. Not only because he gets to play with the starters, but because he gets to play in this funhouse mirror of an offense. But I like Clint Capella defensively. I think he's more versatile than he's getting the opportunity for. So to me, those two guys, I wouldn't have them an honorable mention, but I would say they're the best of players to watch.
Yeah, the big problem with Capella is the free throws. He can't shoot at all. I mean, a lot of these centers can't, but also just he gets completely destroyed by post-up big men. Like, he couldn't play down the end of this game because Brook Lopez was just killing him tonight against the Nets. And I was considering putting Capella into the honorable mention, and then I didn't have Steven Adams in the honorable mention. I'm like, wait a minute, like, Steven Adams is a year older than him, and he's been way better than him. Like, this is Capella's first year as a starter. Yeah. Like, Steven Adams is better. Like,
if Capella has a year even similar to what Adams did last year, and his playoffs were substantially better last year, then maybe you have a different conversation, but he hasn't done it yet.
Yeah, and Adams just has that bulk that is that Capella is never going to have, and I think that's still, while not as important as it was in past years, is still important for a center. And also, I think the fact that Adams can post up at times is something that is important, at least against a mismatch, whereas Capella is eminently switchable. A few other ones that I had in here, I'm guessing you probably wouldn't even have Jahlil Okafor in your players to watch. He was actually honorable mention for me last year, so was Noel.
No, I'd have him in players to watch. He still has his offensive ceiling is incredible, and I think he can figure it out a little bit defensively, so sure, I would have him in players to watch.
Yeah, I think he's taken some very small steps defensively this year. Not amazing, but we have seen some progress. He has actually been using his wingspan to block some shots on occasion. I had Moutier in honorable mention last year. I think just 9.0 PER this year just cannot be efficient offensively. I still think he has the chance to turn into a valuable player, but he's just he's a level below some of these other guys, and they're starting to really, I think, cut his minutes down a little bit. Someone who was unranked for me last year is Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and he really, as a guy who I still think he's going to be able to shoot threes, while he's shooting better last I checked on threes this year, he does very well in the RPM metrics as a shooting guard, one of the best defensive shooting guards on ones or twos. I think he's just kind of the Steven Adams of shooting guards, where he's just a very solid player. He's 23 already, so it doesn't have a ton of upside to explore, but just the type of player that is valuable, and there aren't that many of them around, and especially the positional scarcity, and you see that they kind of fall apart without him. He plays so many minutes for them for a darn good reason.
Yeah, he was out of the game entirely against the Sixers and was a part of why their defense just wasn't there.
I had Julius Randle in this, probably the guy I feel the least good about here, but he's had some moments. I think it's possible that a month or two from now, this will look stupid. Like, he just had a really nice start to the year. He's shooting unsustainably well at the rim. This whole Lakers team had this feel good aura. He showed some ability to switch, but now, they're one of the worst defenses in the league after a couple of months. The Lakers are now 10-17 and they're going on this road trip. Like, they could just be, 12-25 pretty soon, and maybe he won't be playing as well and shouldn't be in there, but I still think he has some potential. I like what he's done this year, so I put him in the players to watch. And then the other guy who I had in who was not ranked last year was Otto Porter.
Yeah, he's had a great year. I think he should be in here. I considered him for honorable mention as well, just because he's established it offensively in a way that a lot of these other players have not. It's kind of a parallel to Bradley Beal, incidentally. But he doesn't have the upside of a lot of those players, and since this is grading them out as prospects, I think this is right. And one guy who I have, maybe it's my equivalent of a vanity pick, but I think he has to be at least in players to watch, is Dragan Bender. He's not getting a great opportunity in Phoenix at the moment, but talented guy. I like his fit offensively and defensively with a lot of different schemes, and he's a player I'm going to be watching.
I'm not going to watch him at all. He can't be in my players to watch. Now, that's, I thought of him. I think that's the, I mean, we didn't even begin to think about Marquise Chris at all. No Chris Dunn. That's got to be a disappointment, I think, but he's been playing a little bit better lately, but at age 22, being a guy who probably has not really been a rotation quality player so far this year, hard to put him in there when you consider how old he is. Chris, has been awful this year, and I just don't believe in his basketball intelligence that he's ever going to get it. He could, but it's too remote of a possibility for me. And then a few players who dropped out for me from last year, I had Marcus Smart in the honorable mention He is completely dropped out for me just because of some of the issues that we talked about in the 15 and 60 yesterday, where he just is not looking like he's someone who can be a starting point guard anytime soon. And now in his third year, you would be hoping to see that from him. Again, another guy who maybe if you were in another situation would have had the ability to show more. But when he does run pick and rolls and try to get to the rim, it just doesn't look that good. And then from the players to watch, Justice Winslow, he has missed 16 straight games now with this wrist injury, and he might even have to have surgery at the end of the season. He's going to try to play with a brace on it the rest of the year, but just the jump shot has not developed at all. He was just in the players to watch last year because any rookie who's 19 and getting minutes on a good team, you would have to put him in there. But the competition has gotten better and he hasn't really improved at all. Stanley Johnson, another guy, same problem there. His shooting just hasn't been good enough, and unlike Justice, he doesn't make up for it in the on-off stats either. And then TJ Warren was another guy that I had in there too, just because of his foot injury, and then now he's had this mysterious head issue that we still don't know what it is. Just hasn't had enough of a chance to show it. I think he's had some moments, but just not enough of a resume to be in there for me.
You brought up Chris Dunn not making the list as a disappointment. Aaron Gordon is younger than Chris Dunn and didn't make the list.
That's actually probably the biggest disappointment that there is. And I didn't have him on here last year. You know, he didn't have much of a rookie year, I felt like. But last year he was, I think he really came on towards the end of last year. But yeah, I mean, he was on my list of like, okay, what's the universe of every single player I'm going to consider? But that's really about it. And
well, he made the next list for me, but then he didn't make it past that.
Yeah.
And MKG's still younger. He's 23. I believe he turned 23 pretty recently. But the issue between him and KCP and Marcus Smart, I would have him probably above Marcus Smart just because I think he's a little bit more of a versatile defensive player just in terms of the rebounding part of it. But he sucks offensively. And he has to get, there's so much that he has to do to even be a positive on that end.
Do you think it's even worth talking about like who else we remotely even considered? I think it's fair just to talk about it. No, I'll just read them off.
You know? Sure, you can read them off. Reading them off is fine. I don't think we need to discuss it.
Yeah, okay. I mean, if there's anyone that pops out to you, Thonmaker, I still think can be pretty good. That's another kind of vanity pick. No one's seen him do anything yet. It's going to be a long time before he gets there if he does. But I think he can be, you know, a very solid pick and pop big man who can defend. Norman Powell, I think he can be a starting shooting guard at some point. You know, older, obviously, at 23, I think. Mo Harkless at 23 as a starter. You know, that's pretty good. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist as well. Just his offense is just so bad. I didn't have enough upside for me to really put him on here. I did mention Gordon. Trey Lyles has had some moments in Utah. I don't know if he has the defensive upside. Domantas Sabonis is at least starting for Oklahoma City, so I had to think about him and then immediately dismiss him because he hasn't been that good. Yusuf Nurkic has had some moments. He at least is now back in consideration on this list. He was in the players to watch a couple years ago, and then he was coming back from that patellar tendon, so wasn't on it last year. And then Josh Richardson in Miami was another guy that I thought about at least. But he, and if he hadn't been injured for half this year, he might have been in greater consideration. But he's just now again coming back from this latest ankle injury after that MCL injury too.
This is widely anticipated to be a good draft for a couple different reasons. I'm going to be excited to see how many of those guys make this list based on summer league and then, you know, of course the college career and then a month and a half of the NBA season. Cause this year, yeah, it's a different kind of class, but we had one guy definitely in, then you had Jamal in and I had him just off, but we'll see if that class can push it maybe to two or three guys, but there aren't going to be many players that graduate off this list because Drummond's 23, AD's 23, and those are the only guys off either of our lists that are going to graduate.
Yeah, that'll be fascinating to see what we think of these 2017 guys. And other than Fultz, it really doesn't look like there's anyone who's like massive superstar type of potential, at least from the little bit of, you know, watching Draft Express videos that I've done so far. I haven't gotten into it yet. And going to the Hoop Summit last year, seeing these guys a little bit in, you know, some like Adidas Nations and stuff. Last question. Which of these guys in the top 10 has the biggest chance of making us feel stupid that we put them in there next year?
Stupid that we put them in there, period?
Well, I mean, most likely to drop out would be another way of looking at it.
For you, it's Jamal Murray because you had Murray on and he's the most uncertain. For me, I think it's Wiggins. Wiggins.
Yeah, that was going to be my choice too.
Because he's living on hype right now and he's living on physical potential and that has a shelf life. It really does. And he's playing for a great defensive coach. So a lot of the plausible deniability that his supporters have brought up for a long time. And I'm okay with it because he's so physically gifted. And you see that when you in person, you see it on film.
Yeah, you see it on film, but you never see it on film. If you just watch when he tries to block a shot, he just like rarely jumps. And when he does, he never even comes close, you know, like that, or never gets a steal. I mean, maybe he could become like the small forward version of Klay Thompson defensively, where he doesn't get any blocks or steals, but he at least kind of locks down on his own man pretty well. And has a lot of effort, but I'm starting to see that as kind of his defensive ceiling now. Like, he's not going to be a Kawhi Leonard type of force, the guy that he was drafted to be. I don't think that's possible that can happen. I mean, I haven't ever done any research on this, but I'm pretty sure that part of the reason that steal rate is considered to be, and probably block rate to a lesser extent, is so important in prospects is that those aren't things that get better, you know? And so,
and they're a proxy for elements like effort. Like, look at Marcus Smart. Like, if Wiggins went after it defensively even half as much as Marcus Smart does, he would be in serious contention for tier three on this list, and we would be talking about, oh, if he can really do it, he could be tier two, or he could be tier two even without the offensive development that we hope for. But without it, he's just a different guy.
Yeah, and I will say this, I think it's more likely that his shooting improvement this year, which he does deserve a lot of credit for, I mean, that's like what he's done with his three-pointer this year compared to last year, it's night and day. But I think it's more likely
To make a point on that. Yeah. So his three-point shooting has gotten better and he's shooting more of it, but it has, and this doesn't have to be a decision, but it just happens to correlate in this case, or happens to connect, that he's also taking a lot fewer shots at the rim, and those are better than threes for him, like getting to the line and everything else. And so
shooting a worse percentage at the rim too.
Yeah, so like if that's the trade-off, if it's being, you know, taking those shots, being a little bit further out, that's not a trade-off I'd make. It doesn't have to be a choice. A lot of guys improve at both of those things. Damian Lillard is a great example of how that can work, but you want to see both positives at the same time.
And I think also after a great start to the year, I don't think he's getting to the line quite as much as he had been either. So the point I was starting to make was I think that this shooting improvement where he's shooting, I mean, because he's shooting 40% on threes right now, and he still hasn't really been like an effective player in the aggregate other than just simply scoring. And he hasn't been that efficient. I think his true shooting percentage is kind of right around the league average at this point. So if he's going to shoot 40% on threes and his PER is still going to be like 15 or 16. And yes, I realize PER is not the end all be all, but it's a good proxy.
And it helps him because he's higher usage, right? And he's higher usage and on the, yeah, you know, on the lower end of efficiency.
And he's also not a good defensive player in the non-box score sets. But yeah, so if he's, and he doesn't do anything on the glass, like I think those are all things that aren't going to get better. So he is the one, I think, and Drummond too, you know, he'll graduate off this list next year because he's 23 already, but you know, he may not improve where I'll be like, oh, he was your number nine prospect. Like what the hell, you know, looking back on it. So those are the two guys that I worry about. But I would say it is Wiggins maybe more than Drummond, but there is always the caveat that he's a 21-year-old who's scoring like 22 a game or whatever it is. And reasonable efficiency.
Yeah.
And that means something. And he's made some improvements in his passing and stuff. All right. Player who is not in the top 10 that's going to make us look like idiots for not having him in there.
For you, it's going to be Miles Turner. But... But the other one...
Yeah, maybe. But I still, like, you know, I don't think so, actually, because there's no, like, he's not ever going to be a superstar. He just doesn't have that type of offensive skill,
though. Yeah, he's going to settle into kind of, I have him in tier four. I think that's where he'll be in all likelihood, unless something crazy happens. I don't think it's going to be this year, but it could be summer league or beginning of next year that Brandon Ingram really blows up. I like his game a lot, and he can be in a better situation now that I think Luke Walton and the staff have a clearer idea of what he does well. So that it might take some time to get that in and build some more cohesive surrounding talent around what they have.
Yeah, Ingram and Brown are probably the two, but I think like Brown, just because of the situation he's in, he's not going to blow up this year. And so
unless they trade him.
That's a good point. But yeah, with Turner, I don't think I'm going to look that bad. Number one, because he was like my first omission, but also because he doesn't have superstar potential. You know, I think the guys in that honorable mention who have superstar potential, and I put Braun and Ingram higher on that list. And then I think also Russell and Devin Booker are maybe the other two where you're like, all right, these guys, it's possible that these guys could just blow up. I would say Booker is more likely to do that than Russell. But those are probably the guys for me. All right, we done here?
I think so.
All right, don't forget about Stance Socks. Just go check them out. Their whole NBA page, they have like 250 awesome NBA socks that you are going to just feel really cool when you wear, because I do.
And we should also talk about the Twitter NBA show.
Yes, we should. Special Tuesday edition. ESPN actually has Tuesday games this week, and it's going to be a really good late game. I'm looking forward to OKC at Portland. Russell Westbrook versus a team with no rim protection. That'll be very interesting to see. And then what's the early game? The Tibbs return to Chicago.
Yes, Tibbs return. Wolves at Bulls.
I have a feeling that's actually going to be a pretty close game. I'm looking forward to that one. Jimmy Butler, now second in the NBA in RPM, mostly because I think it's more powered by the fact that they just suck every time he goes off the floor necessarily than anything that he himself is necessarily doing.
Insufficient replacements is the skill, Nate.
Well, so we're going to do a halftime show for both games, which will get tweeted out from Nate Duncan NBA, or you can follow me on Periscope at Nate Duncan NBA if you want to just get a push notification whenever we go live. Won't spam you with that because we only go live with awesome content. And then we have a whole long halftime or a whole long post-game show where we actually take live questions from Periscope. We take Twitter questions as well, recap the games with advanced stats and all of our usual stuff. So if you're kind of missing the Dunked On game recaps, go to that. I think probably not this week, but hopefully before Christmas, we'll actually make that a podcast as well to send it out the next day. No Dunked On tomorrow though. So check out the Twitter NBA show. We will talk to y'all on Wednesday night. Till then.